word and statistic.
No mention of mental or emotional problems, Gaeta said, or of medications. The sons of bitches have faked her dossier. They're framing her. Cardenas recorded the entire file into her handheld. Then she popped to her feet. Let's go to the rally and confront Eberle with this, she said. Right, said Gaeta. But when he slid the front door open, four burly men and women in the dead black tunics of the security force were standing in the hallway, slim black batons hooked into their belts. Colonel Kananga wants to talk to you, said one of the women who seemed to be their leader. After the rally, he asks that you stay here until he can get to you. Wordlessly, Cardenas slid the door shut and went back to the sofa. They must know what we've done, Gaeta said. They've bugged this apartment, said Cardenas, dropping back onto the sofa. They can hear every word we say, and they know about Holly's dossier from Atlanta. Feeling dazed, helpless, Gaeta said, then they know that Tavalera's gone to the tunnels to find her.
The final rally. It was hard to talk with so many people pressing around them. Eberle and Morgenthau were walking side by side along the path that led down to the lakeside rally site. Viborg was slightly behind them, Kananga and a pair of his biggest men up ahead, clearing a path through the thick crowd of people who lined the path, shouting and smiling and reaching for Eberle to shake his hand, touch him, get a smile from him. He wanted to shake their hands, smile at them, bask in the glow of their adulation, but instead he virtually ignored them as he talked with Morgenthau. "She's in the tunnels," he shouted over the crowd's meaningless hubbub. Morgenthau nodded, puffing hard despite the fact that the press of the crowd slowed their pace to little more than a snail's pace. "Cardenas's assistant has entered the tunnels to search for her," she yelled into Eberle's ear. "I hope he has better success than Kananga's oafs." "What?" "Nothing," he said louder. "Never mind. We've detained Cardenas and the stuntman. They have Holly's original dossier." A shock of alarm hit Eberle. "How did they get it?" "From Atlanta. The new morality has dossiers on everybody aboard the Habitat, apparently." Wringing his hands in frustration, Eberle said, "I should have doctored those files, too." "Too late for that. This is getting out of hand. We can't keep Gaeta and Cardenas locked up. I've been pushing Gaeta's stunt as a campaign issue. Viborg thought it best to keep them quiet until after the election tomorrow." Eberle glanced over his shoulder. "Viborg. That sour little troll has been the cause of all this trouble," he told himself. "Once I'm firmly in power, I'll get rid of him." But then he thought, "The little snake knows too much about me. The only way to be rid of him is to silence him permanently." A brass band came blaring up to him, surrounded his little group, and escorted them to the speaker's platform. They were amateur musicians, making up in enthusiasm what they lacked in talent. They blew so loudly that Eberle couldn't think. Urbain and Timoshenko were already seated on the platform, he saw as they approached. The crowd was cheering wildly, already worked up to a near frenzy. Wilmot was nowhere in sight. Good. Let him remain in his quarters, as I instructed. I want these people to see me as their leader, no one else. He climbed the stairs and took his chair between Timoshenko and Urbain. The several little bands clumped together into one large conglomeration in front of the platform and played a faltering rendition of Now Let Us Praise Famous Men. Eberle wondered how the women of the Habitat felt about the sexist sentiment. The band was so poor that it didn't matter, he decided. The blaring music finally ended, and an expectant hush fell over the crowd. Eberle saw that fully 3,000 of the Habitat's population were standing on the grass facing him. It was the biggest crowd of the campaign, yet Eberle felt disappointed, dejected. 70% of the population doesn't care enough about this election to attend the rally. 70%. They sit home and do nothing, then complain when the government does things they don't like. The fools deserve whatever they get. The crowd sat on the chairs that had been arranged for them. Eberle saw that there were plenty of empties. Before they could begin to get restless, he rose slowly and stepped to the podium. I'm a little embarrassed, he said as he clipped the pinhead microphone to his tunic. Professor Wilmot isn't able to be with us this evening, and he asked me to serve as moderator in his place.
Don't be embarrassed,
came a woman's voice from somewhere in the throng. Eberly beamed a smile in her general direction and went on. As you probably already know, we are not going to bore you with long-winded speeches this evening. Each candidate will make a brief 5-minute statement that summarizes his position on the major issues. After these statements, you will be able to ask questions of the candidates. He hesitated a heartbeat, then went on. The order of speakers this evening was chosen by lot, and I won the first position. However, I think it's a little too much for me to be both the moderator and the first speaker, so I'm going to change the order of the candidates' statements and go last. Dead silence from the audience. Eberly turned slightly toward Urbain, then back to the crowd. Our first speaker, therefore, will be Dr. Edouard Urbain, our chief scientist. Dr. Urbain has had a distinguished career.
Holly watched the newscast of the rally from the tunnel. Professor Wilmot's not there, she thought. I wonder why. Then she realized that this was the perfect opportunity to get to Wilmot without Kananga or anyone else interfering. Holly got to her feet. Just about everybody's at the rally, she saw, eyes still on the screen. I'll bet Wilmot's in his quarters. I could sneak in there and tell him what's going on. She turned off the wall screen and started striding purposefully along the tunnel, heading for Athens and Wilmot's quarters. After a few minutes, though, she turned off into a side tunnel that provided access for maintenance robots to trundle from one main utility tunnel to another. No sense marching straight to the village, she told herself. Go the roundabout way and look out for any guards that might be snooping around. So she missed Raoul Tavallera, who came down the utility tunnel from the direction of Athens, looking for her.
Urbain and then Timoshenko spent their 5 minutes reviewing the positions they had stressed all through the campaign. Urbain insisted that scientific research was the habitat's purpose, its very raison d'etre, and with him as director, the habitat's exploration of Saturn and Titan would be a great success. Timoshenko had taken up part of Eberly's original position, that the scientists should not become an exalted elite with everyone else in the habitat destined to serve them. Eberly thought that Timoshenko received a larger and longer round of applause than Urbain did. As Timoshenko sat down, Eberly rose and walked slowly to the podium. Is Morgenthau right, he asked himself. Are Timoshenko's voters switching to Urbain? Are the engineers lining up with the scientists? It makes no difference, Eberly told himself as he gripped the edges of the podium. Now is the time to split them. Now is the time to swing the overwhelming majority of votes to me. Now is the time, he said to the audience, for me to introduce the final speaker. I find myself in the somewhat uncomfortable position of introducing myself. A few titters of laughter rippled through the crowd. So let me say, without fear of being contradicted, that here is a man who needs no introduction. Me. They laughed. Vyborg and several of his people began to applaud, and most of the crowd joined in. Eberly stood at the podium, soaking up their adulation. Real or enforced, it didn't matter to him as long as the people down there performed as he wanted them to. Once they quieted down, Eberly said, This habitat is more than a playground for scientists. It is more than a scientific expedition. It is our home, yours and mine. Yet they want to tell us how we should live, how we should serve them. They take it for granted that we will maintain strict population controls, even though this habitat could easily house and feed 10 times our current population. But how will we be able to afford an expanding population? Our ecology and our economy are fixed, locked in place. There is no room for population growth, for babies, in their plans for our future. I have a different plan. I know how we can live and grow and be happy. I know how each and every one of you can get rich. Eberly could feel the crowd's surge of interest. Raising an arm to point outward, he said, Circling around Saturn, is the greatest treasure in the